more black babies are aborted than are being born, yet we see black people supporting abortion and Planned Parenthood.
Absolutely. And as you well know, the beginnings of abortion in this country with Margaret Sanger, it was absolutely her intention to cull the population of the unwanted. And that was clearly focused somewhat on black families and on black women and in decreasing the number of black births. So I find it extraordinarily concerning that black women don't see that. It's been said that one of the most unsafe places for an infant is within the uterus of a black woman in this country.
Yes.
Because
yes.
They are such high risk of being aborted.
It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
Many Americans are heart-sickened by the changes that are taking place in America with regards to abortion laws and the disregard for human life. Recently, New York State passed one of the most liberal abortion laws in the country that allows for the death of an unborn baby up to the point of delivery in certain cases. And Virginia, my home state, seems bent on passing a similar law. You might ask, why is all of this happening? It's happening out of fears that President Trump, who is pro-life, will appoint an additional conservative justice to the Supreme Court, and Roe v. Wade might be overturned or sent back to the states. And so out of these fears, the left has gone into a panic about abortion, trying to make it as readily available as going to a drugstore and buying a candy bar. So joining me today is Kelly Victory, who is the president of Victory Health. She's a physician, and she's going to talk about the abortion laws and what she does. And so I welcome Kelly. I met her through my new interest in the healthcare industry, which taken place. I met her through my interest in the healthcare industry and what's taken place with regards to drugs and affordable health care. And Kelly, as a physician, can talk with us about the abortion laws and just the impact that this these changes have on women and men. So Kelly, welcome to the Be the People show.
It's great to be with you, Carol, and I'm happy to join you in discussing this topic, which I think for many people is extraordinarily concerning. As you said, this has implications not only from a medical perspective, but also from a societal perspective, spiritually, ethically, morally, and I think it's worthy of some discussion.
Well, with the New York law, were you surprised by the fact that it passed? I know that they had tried for many years to get that legislation passed. It was it failed, you know, for many years, but this time it went through and was signed with a great celebration.
And that was what I found most upsetting, perhaps, was the celebratory component of this. You are quite right that people on the left in particular are running around with their hair on fire right now about abortion in general because of what I believe are misplaced concerns that President Trump or the Supreme Court will ultimately reverse Roe v. Wade. I think that that is unlikely, and I don't think that that is what really is being discussed. But in a response to that concern, people on the left have gone to the they have jumped the shark, if you will, to use the common vernacular, and have gone so far beyond the pale that I believe that this is an egregious affront to the moral decency of people in this country. They are pushing now for essentially, as you said, abortion on demand and without any restriction up until the time of birth and perhaps even beyond the actual delivery of the baby. At this point in time, there are only two countries on the planet that have those laws in place, and that is China and North Korea. So if you believe that we are in any way defined by the company we keep, I would suggest that this is not where we want to be, that the United States should not be in line with two brutal dictatorships when they adopt their abortion laws.
Yes, and I assume that if the Supreme Court revisits the issue, that it may well send it back to the states. But if it sends it back to the states, that means that New York's law, you know, might be in place. And back in the 70s, New York had the most liberal abortion laws at the time. It allowed for abortion up to 24 weeks. And again, my home state of Virginia, there's a controversy there because they would like to pass a similar law. And I believe all the blue states are scrambling around trying to see how they can liberalize their abortion access.
Well, if we're able to remove for a moment some of the emotionality around the issue and think more from a scientific or logical perspective, I think it sheds some light on the fallacy or the faulty logic behind these proposed laws. For example, and the left, by the way, generally likes to think of themselves as the party of science. So let's think more scientifically or more logically, if you will. States like New York and Rhode Island and Virginia are states that also are arguing or have argued that the death penalty, you know, capital punishment, is unconstitutional.
Right.
So these are states that have come to the conclusion that it is immoral or unconstitutional to kill someone who is perhaps a convicted murderer or a serial rapist. Yet those same states would then put on the books a law that would allow for the termination of a full-term viable baby. So there's a gross disconnect there.
They also protect animals.
Absolutely. And these same states, Rhode Island in particular, for example, is one of the 30 plus states that have state homicide laws that recognize the unborn as victims. So in the state of New York or Virginia or Rhode Island, if someone is convicted of killing a woman who happens to be pregnant, that person can be charged and convicted with the murder also of the unborn child. So how can you have a state that has decided that the unborn child is actually a human being for the purposes of convicting someone of murder or manslaughter, but then out of the other side of their mouths claim that this is not a life?
Well, Kelly, you know, the political left used to argue that they wanted abortions to be safe and rare. It seems to me that those arguments have totally gone out the window. I don't hear them anymore.
You are correct. That is exactly right. And when you talk, the problem, Carol, is that when you try to talk with somebody on the left about this issue, they immediately retreat to a highly rehearsed and very narrow set of talking points. Namely, number one, that it is immoral or not right for you to try to control women's bodies, quote unquote. And that number two, we want to reverse Roe v. Wade and send women back to unsafe back alley coat hanger abortions. Neither of these obviously are correct. They also will argue that these late term abortions that happen beyond 5 months of gestation, are, quote, very, very rare, and they will say that it is less than 2% of all the abortions done in this country are late term. Well, let's do the math on that. If they are correct that somewhere in the range of 2% are done late. That represents more than 13,000 abortions. 13,000, purely because of the numbers. We are upwards of 680,000 abortions last year in this country. So 2% represents an awful lot of late-term abortions.
Well, one of the things that was very disheartening for me was to see those black women celebrating and smiling when, black women are getting 37% of the abortions. They're only 14% of the population, and it's been estimated over 19 million black babies have been aborted since Roe v. Wade. And in New York State, more black babies are aborted than are being born, yet we see black people supporting abortion and Planned Parenthood.
Absolutely. And as you well know, the beginnings of abortion in this country with Margaret Sanger, it was absolutely her intention to cull the population of the unwanted. And that was clearly focused somewhat on black families and on black women and in decreasing the number of black births. So I find it extraordinarily concerning that black women don't see that. It's been said that one of the most unsafe places for an infant is within the uterus of a black woman in this country.
Yes.
Because
yes,
they are such high risk of being aborted.
And this whole abortion debate has taken us towards a society of where infanticide is tolerated. Would you like to talk some about the late-term abortions? And I'm not sure if you heard the governor of Virginia talking about comfort care of babies that were born alive.
Oh, I absolutely did. Ralph Northam, who is the recently elected governor of Virginia, who happens, incidentally, Carol, to be a pediatric neurologist, which I find just extraordinarily concerning. But he said the other day when he was talking about late-term abortion, he's talking about abortion up to the point of a full-term delivery.
Yes.
That even after the baby was delivered, that the baby would be, quote, kept comfortable, resuscitated, and then a discussion would ensue between the mother and her physicians about what to do about that. I stared in awe at the television saying, how could this be? How could someone actually suggest that a live infant could then potentially be exterminated? And that is certainly what it sounded that he was suggesting. Now, even if the child has not been born yet, I think that when you talk to most Americans and you look at the surveys, most Americans now understand or accept that abortion, as it stands right now, Roe v. Wade, that there will be some provisions to make abortion available with some very strict limits. Most people set those limits somewhat arbitrarily at a 12-week cutoff point, perhaps 14 weeks, very early, you know, in the first trimester of the pregnancy. And although that is perhaps an imperfect position, many people and many physicians accept that that needs to be available as an option.
Some of the philosophers like Peter Singer have argued, you know, for years that parents should possess the right to determine whether that child lives or dies. And in one paper, I know that Peter Singer put it at a month, 30 days after the child is born. Some others have argued for as long as a year after the child is born, a parent should be able to make the decision as to whether or not that child lives or dies or whether or not they can kill that child.
That's exactly right. And those, they're very, very faulty arguments. Peter Singer in particular has argued that because the child does not have his own sense of self or something that I find ridiculous and repugnant, that the parents should be able to determine whether that child lives or dies. We are now no longer talking about anything that even vaguely represents a risk to the health of the mother, which is where this all started. And now we are talking about whether or not it is convenient or perhaps in the best mental health interests of the parents, whether or not a child lives or dies. It's a very, very slippery slope, because if you're going to suggest that an infant that's a month old or 6 months old or 1 year old, why cut it off there? Why? Perhaps the terrible twos will become very problematic for parents. And are we suggesting that until the child is independent, they can be there at the whim of the parents? That is just repugnant.
Well, the thing that I find repugnant is that a lot of the most liberal people that advance these arguments are ethicists. And when did ethics become a discipline or a field where you would get these kind of bizarre arguments from the people that study it and teach it to our young people at elite institutions and other places?
I agree. These are not philosophical or ethical discussions. I can tell you, as a physician, I am obligated to consider the health and welfare of a fetus, of an unborn child, when I treat the mother. If I treat a pregnant woman with a medication or a treatment regimen that can have untoward effect on that unborn child, I can be held liable. There's a malpractice issue. These are not issues of morals and ethics. These are issues of healthcare and my medical obligation. So to turn it over then and say, let's talk just in the hypothetical, in some classroom where an ethicist or a philosopher is going to pontificate about his or her opinions about what is a valuable life, then we have taken it beyond the pale.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when I return, we can talk more about this.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, welcome back to Be the People. What do you think should be done next when it comes to the American people, their power, but also physicians, legislators? Is there a way to turn around this cultural environment where states feel, you know, comfortable pushing legislation that involves taking human life and taking it in such a way that they're destroying the weakest of the weak?
Well, I think that one approach is to look at the gross inconsistencies, as I was mentioning earlier, in their definition of life, and look, for example, at state homicide laws that recognize the unborn victims, that look at some of these things and say, you states, your courts, your constitutions need to look at these gross inconsistencies and determine how you are going to justify that. If you have outlawed or declared unconstitutional capital punishment, then how can you please answer to this? Address these gross inconsistencies. Likewise, I think we need to rely more on the actual science. That is what the left constantly asks us to do. Well, if we look at the science, and we take an argument that this is part of a woman's body and we don't have the right to control women's bodies, I would say this is not part and parcel with a woman's body. I will grant you that the woman is the host for this baby, but that baby does not share identical DNA with the mother at all. most commonly has a different blood type from the mother. It is a different and separate entity. And so we need to start, I believe, looking at the science and quoting the science, not just relying on the moral component or the ethical components of our arguments, and also looking at the inconsistencies that are on the books of these states with regard to how they define a life.
But Kelly, what I find now with the political left is that with postmodernism, they reject science. And that's why we have the transgender confusion. And science is only useful to the left when it advances their agenda.
You are quite right. And unfortunately, I believe that this absolutely represents the slide into the socialist abyss, because we are now saying that there are no rules about gender, there are no rules about who we kill, there are no rules or any we don't believe or accept in the sanctity of life. If you're on the left, if you're on the political left, we have to blur all of those lines. And if you look back through the ages at societies that have fallen, that have great societies, whether it's the Greeks or the Romans, it was always when they had a complete and total breakdown of the moral code.
I agree.
And of societal norms and accepted societal obligation. And I think we are on a very, very much on a crash course if we continue and allow the political left to take us in that direction.
You're 100% right. And with the time we have remaining, tell our listeners a little bit about you and what you do, and then later how they can contact you. We have a few minutes that I just want you to talk about what you do and why.
Sure. I am a trauma and emergency specialist by training and did that for many, many years. I became a specialist in the medical management of mass casualty and spent a large part of my clinical career managing large disasters and responding to those and helping to manage how we do those. I have spent a lot of my last decade of my career doing healthcare policy work and got very engaged, frankly, during the debate about Obamacare. I'm one of the few people on the planet who actually read the entire Obamacare legislation before it was passed, and was someone who was very vocal and outspoken about how that was going to fail, and clearly it has. I have become more and more engaged in healthcare policy issues as I have seen the impact on the American people and the fact that we have gone from having the greatest healthcare system on the planet to having one that I believe is at huge, huge risk based on, number one, these changes in the legislation, the movement for things like, quote, Medicare for all, the idea that we are removing choice in both the physicians that you choose to treat your family and your options for treatment, and the idea that the government knows better than you do about what you and your family need. So I have transitioned from my clinical practice to one that is focused far more on healthcare policy and on issues like the one we are discussing here this morning.
Okay.
I'm more than happy to speak with people and to debate with people on these issues, as long as it is done respectfully. And people can follow me on Twitter, certainly, at Dr. Kelly Victory. I also can be reached by email at kvictory@victoryhealth.com. Victory Health is my consulting firm that I do, as I said, a lot of work. I work with a number of politicians and have helped them to craft their own policy statements on like abortion. And I might say that one of the things that I have discussed with a number of politicians when they are always asked, Carol, whether they are pro-life or pro-choice. And one of the things that I find helpful is for politicians to say that regardless of where you stand on that, the idea that we are making abortion available to people on the taxpayer's dollar.
Yes.
Is grossly objectionable. And right. I might remind people that choice goes both ways. If you want to argue that a woman has a choice to terminate a pregnancy, then she has a choice to become pregnant. And we certainly are not suggesting that taxpayers should fund things like in vitro fertilization or fertility treatments or things of that sort. We always, the left chooses to interpret choice as simply the choice to end a pregnancy,
yes,
when in fact it should go the other way. So if we are going to have state-funded or taxpayer-funded abortions, then I would argue we better get ready to have state-funded or taxpayer-funded fertility treatment.
I think that we are moving in that direction, and we should remind people that unless it's a case of rape or incest, a woman always has a choice as to whether or not she's going to have sex in the first place. And the abortion debate, we focus a lot on the woman because she's the one that's carrying the baby, but there's the life of the baby, there's the health consequences to the mother, but there's also a man involved, and men can be traumatized by abortion as well. And this whole issue, you know, is much more complicated than the political left lets on.
Absolutely. And we have not discussed, Carol, that one of the arguments the left will make is that we need to pay attention to the health of the mother.
Right.
Well, as a physician, I can tell you that I am unaware of any health condition from which a mother would benefit from an abortion at, say, 24 weeks or beyond in gestation at all. There's delivering the child, yes. There are cases where the woman may have a condition where it is critical to urgently or emergently deliver that baby, but not to abort it. In fact, I personally have done emergency cesarean sections.
We're going to have to leave that for another show, but that's really important. And I know that there's research on the consequences, the health consequences for women that have abortions. And I should have you back on to discuss that as its own show.
Yeah, and in fact, and one thing that we might want to talk about at some point too is, I should have thought of it earlier, is that, you know, I have done cesarean sections, Carol, in women where the mother is dead. The mother has died.
Again, we need to cover that in another show, but I mean, that is amazing.
Yeah, I've done where mother was either a victim of a gunshot wound and came in, so she's clearly pregnant and clearly very long in her pregnancy, was shot and killed. But the baby's heart is still, the baby's still alive.
Yes.
And a live baby from a mother who has deceased, has died, or from car crash. You know, I had one where it was a car accident where the mother was clearly deceased, but had a viable baby. So when you look at, talk about science, that's science. You know, these are independent beings.
We have a lot of work cut out for us. This show on abortion has explained just what's taking place in our society and why, but also just how dangerous it is for any culture to follow the path that we are in the United States. It's not too late for us to turn things around, but it requires all of us to be involved and to do our part. And as always, I remind you that we the people can be the people who change America and our world.